Today on The Breakdown, it's a cash game hand for all you cash game maniacs out there, all you cash game heads who love the cash game so much. We're doing a cash game hand. It's from The Big Game. Remember that incredible show? It was the best poker show on TV for a long time. And it's got all the people you want in the hand. Let me just say that, all right? It's got Tony G. Hello. It's got Viffer. And more famous than either of those guys, it has Bobby freaking Sura, who actually is more famous than those guys, but probably most of you don't know who that is. He was an NBA player. He made $45 million in his career, and he's in this hand as well, playing for the big bucks. And I will say that this hand takes some surprising twists and turns, much like an R.L. Crum novel. That's right. Like the third Goosebumps novel specifically is what I'm thinking of there. And if you know that book well enough, you actually probably already can predict how this hand is going to go. Goosebumps forever! Goosebumps heads! On The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey,
a couple things.
It's R.L. Stine.
Yeah.
Damn it.
That was the first thing.
God.
The second thing is this a cash game hand or a tournament hand? I couldn't tell from the opening.
It's a cash game hand.
Oh, okay.
For all you cash game heads.
Oh, that's
out there.
Why you were saying the thing about cash game heads.
Yeah.
Because if it's a cash game hand.
Because there were people on Discord, because now we have a whole Discord community, saying that someone actually asked, what do you like better, the cash game hands or the tournament hands? And then people weighed in.
So, yeah.
You know, people liked, no matter, depending on who they were, liked one or the other. And a bunch of cash game people were saying they like the cash game hands better. And then they were saying maybe it's because we play cash and all that. So they're cash game heads.
Cash game heads, yeah. I mean, unsurprisingly, it's whatever you play more is what you are more interested in, probably.
Yeah,
not surprising. I'm honestly more interested in doing tournament hands because I play more tournaments and I prefer tournaments to cash games. And I think they create much more interesting spots overall. Now, you don't have the same stack depth in most cases, but I think the ICM stuff is very interesting.
I think the ICM stuff makes tournament hands more interesting. I think the extraordinary stack depth and possibilities that go along with that in cash games make those pretty darn interesting, too.
And so yeah.
I like them both, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I just want to talk about a complex poker hand with you, Grant Dennison, on this airing of the show.
We will talk about a poker hand.
Yeah.
I guess it's got some complexity to it.
It's got Tony G. He's complex.
He is, yeah. He's an enigma.
He killed that kid that time.
Are you thinking of Todd from Breaking Bad?
No, I'm thinking of Neil Diamond from the Saturday Night Live sketch.
Okay.
not Tony G after all.
And then we wrote Sweet Caroline.
good old Neil Diamond sketches. Also, Todd from Breaking Bad. Bit of a spoiler-filled question there, but an incredible, a really elevating section of Breaking Bad.
I think the statute of limitations on spoilers for TV shows is like 2 years at most.
Yeah, at most. You know, I actually got called out is the wrong term here. I got told that I was talking about something from Game of Thrones. This is not that long ago, like in the last 6 months on this, I think it was the podcast. Maybe it was Poker Time. But and I started to mention, I'm going to guess, and I guess for those of you who are in the middle of it, spoiler alert.
So fast forward 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'm going to guess I either talked about Sean Bean meeting his demise or the Red Wedding. But I talked about it without like giving a spoiler alert. And I was, one of our listeners found me and said, you know, you almost ruined all Game of Thrones for me, man. And I'm like, I think that came out like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want me to do? Like, if it's a good, I'm going to make the analogies, you know?
Yeah.
It's more fun. I like being pop culture irrelevant as we are.
It's a tough line to walk, though. You know, like, there's a possibility that some of the listeners haven't seen Fight Club, for example, and don't know what happens in Fight Club.
I mean, I agree with you, but if you haven't seen Fight Club, it's been 20 years.
Yeah, no, it has.
What do you want me to, like, I am going to spoil the end of The Sixth Sense to make a good joke. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you know what? If you haven't heard the end of The Sixth Sense or don't remember it, me making this joke probably isn't going to stay in your mind either. And if it does, you know what? It's still a good movie anyway. These are still good pieces of media anyway. You can watch them even knowing what happens, although it's better not to.
Significantly better for
those. I mean, can I not spoil The Matrix? What happens a third of the way into The Matrix either? They're in a simulation, Grant.
I think that's kind of implicit within the whole thing.
Not really. When I saw it, when I went to the movie theaters, I didn't know that. And I was shocked. Shocked when he woke up in the pod. It was an amazing moment.
Oh, okay.
It was really cool.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, this hand is just like that.
That's why I like it. Bobby Sura, baby.
Bobby Sura. He played for 10 years in the NBA.
And, he did.
He made $45
million. So $45 million. The Cleveland Cavaliers signed Bobby Sura to a six-year, $24 million extension, even though he never averaged more than 8 points. Well, he averaged for his career 8.6 points a game. So I guess he must average like 11 points.
He probably had a season or two where he was like a startable player.
Right. And, you know, he was young. They were probably like, if he can keep, you know, getting better and all this, and I guess he didn't. I mean, whatever. He got to be in the NBA for a long time. I mean, 10 years in the NBA is nothing to sneeze at.
That's pretty damn good. That's why he gets to be playing in these 200, 400 games where he's definitely, like, not dead money, but he's not going to make money over time in these games.
I would agree with that, and I would say this hand is just an example of that as well, like where I don't think he makes optimal decisions.
No.
And that's okay.
Right.
He's Bobby Sura. We don't expect him to.
He's a basketball player.
But, you know, to be clear, don't go pro, Bobby.
This hand now happened about 10 years ago. So if he was going to make that choice, he probably would have done it by now.
Maybe he has. And you know what? Maybe he's gotten better, too. Maybe he, like,
it has been 10 years. I'm a lot better than I was 10 years ago.
Yes, you are.
You don't even know.
I'm just talking about you as a man.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So he played on the same FSU team as Charlie Ward, who went on to win the Heisman Trophy for Florida State, but also played for the Knicks for like 10 years, and Sam Cassell, who won two titles, is an assistant coach in the NBA now. Also, all three of those guys played for, you know, double-digit years in the NBA. They were all guards on the same team.
Well, it's good for Bobby.
Yeah.
Being the third best of those guys. Congratulations to him for that.
Yep. Anyway, that's enough about Bobby Sura's basketball career.
Yeah, let's talk about Ani Huttunen.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, Ani Huttunen suggested this hand. Was this on Discord or Twitter that it was suggested? Doesn't matter. The best place to suggest now is Discord because there's actual conversation, man. Come join the conversation on Discord. That's what they say at the Discord HQ.
And you have to say it in that sort of weird,
cool
tone. Is it cool or is it trying to be cool? It's more the latter.
It's like Silicon Valley trying to be cool. Like I'm imagining at Discord HQ in Palo Alto, which I'm not sure that's where they're from, but I'm just, you know, imagining this whole situation. They use the word disrupt a lot. I'm going to guess that Discord.
Do you think Discord is run by like people in their 20s, or is it people like in their 40s and 50s who are like, hello, fellow teenagers, you know?
I think Discord was created by people in their 20s and bought by venture capital, would be my guess.
That's what happens, I guess. Always co-opted.
Yeah.
There's no avoiding it.
We can make fun of the platform all we want. It's actually a platform that we've been enjoying using.
It's a surprisingly good one. I always found Discord to be really difficult to use when I've like just had poked my head in a little bit here and there. And then you and I sort of, you were like, we're doing this. And I was like, fine. And you forced me to watch like a 20-minute video on how Discord works. And now I use it. I know I really like it and use it not just for that, for our Poker Guy stuff, but for other stuff too. And feel it's pretty useful. So.
Yeah. It's a good, it's different than other mediums and it's good for our thing. If you want to come chat with us, like we are on there frequently. You can ask us questions. We have a section on Discord where you can just submit hands that you've played for the community to critique and review. And we will also chime in on that as well.
Yeah.
And just general fun stuff along with posting all of our hands there for then open discussion about the hands. And it produces some pretty interesting poker conversations so far.
Also, you know, these days now we have our solver team.
Yeah.
Which is Danny Sprung and Wesley Cannon. Mm-hmm. And they are doing solver analysis for these hands and doing write-ups as well. And they're posting those full write-ups in the hand analysis section on Discord so you can really get the full thing.
Right, because we are going to talk about the solver, which was done by Danny Sprung for this hand at the end of the show. As always, we have not seen any of the solver information. We want to be blind to that before making our analysis. After we're done with our analysis, we're going to take a pause, look at the solver analysis done by Danny Sprung, come back and see what the solver had to say and reference how that went with ours.
This one's going to be a little tricky because this is three-handed for some of it.
Yeah.
So we're curious to see how Danny was able to navigate some of the solver stuff because it's not
It was a bit of a
easy to do.
Excuse me, a bit of a task for Danny Sprung.
Yeah. But that's okay. We like putting him through the paces, working him a little bit.
Got to get Danny all the tough work. Wesley, also some tough work.
Yeah.
We want it to be hard work for our solvers. That's what we want.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
Anyone could do it. The point is these guys are specialized.
They are special.
These guys are special.
And they're on Discord. Anyway,
yeah,
there's a link in the description of this podcast that'll bring you to our Discord server. And that's how you join us.
Awesome.
And join the conversation. And yeah, we will have that solver info at the end of the show. Again, suggested by Ani Huttonen. Thank you, Ani.
Good job, Ani.
Yes. I'm kind of surprised we haven't done this one before. I mean,
really?
it's a big game hand. There's big names. There's strange decisions. Very strange decisions.
I mean, I have a creeping guess why we haven't done it, which I will talk about once we understand the whole hand, and I will make my statement, and we'll see what we think.
Okay, I think I know what your statement probably is.
But anyway, you disagree with that statement, right?
Maybe not. Maybe I don't know what your statement is.
Aha! The statement was, Hitler was bad for the world, so you do disagree with it.
Why would you do this to me every time you're
not dead? Every time, most of the time.
I'm getting confused by the double negative.
Yeah, good.
But
just take a stand.
My stand is that Hitler was bad.
Wow. Your stand isn't that Hitler was bad?
It is that Hitler was bad.
There's the double negative. It always gets you.
Stop it. You're the bad person.
You know, if we were a much, much, much bigger podcast, like we obviously have a real community and real listenership and all that, but like the biggest podcasts, like the ESPN podcasts,
sure,
and stuff like that, there are aggregators, news aggregators, who listen to those things for like rumors and then will write it up and link to it, and like to the point where it's problematic for Brian Windhorst and people at ESPN, because they'll just say something like speculating themselves, and it'll get reported as if they're reporting this as like a team is talking this way or
yeah,
stuff like that. And it's problematic for their stuff, and they have to like, because they have relationships with all these teams. So like, lucky for you, we don't have aggregators. Otherwise, you know, Grant says,
right,
Hitler,
yeah,
isn't
of course,
bad,
I think,
for the world.
I think it's actually like, more lucky for you. I mean, you try to paint me into corners with, usually anti-Semitism,
yeah,
is usually what you're trying to paint me as. But in practice, you actually say way more problematic things than I do in general.
Wow, here we go. The gaslighting has begun.
Yeah. Who have we ever had to stop the podcast because of something I said?
I mean, probably once in all these years.
Yeah, maybe.
I think once.
Maybe once.
Yeah. And have we ever had to stop the podcast because of something I said?
Yes.
Like, probably once.
More than once.
Like, no one knows, though. It's an uncountable number. It's probably one or two, and no one knows. Maybe zero, though. Because I'm all full of goodness.
And you're certainly willing to rewrite history. All right, let's get...
See? Aggregators, attack! All right, let's go.
For rewrite history?
Yeah, how dare you.
Okay, anyway, let's get to the hand. Is that like an anti-writer thing?
It's an anti-me thing, okay? And I don't like it, and I hope they come at you with their knives sharpened.
They might.
Although a dull knife is worse now that I think about it, isn't it?
It depends on how dull.
That's true. That's true. If it's dull enough, it's not a threat.
Yeah.
Interesting point.
Yeah.
All right, I'll keep that in mind. All right.
All right, let's, so it's a 200-400 game.
Yeah.
You've got the loose cannon. You guys know what that is, or you don't. It doesn't matter. It's not going to factor in this hand.
Great.
There's an $800 straddle. Viffer is first to act after that, making him the hijack because it is a six-handed game. I believe this was a 100K minimum buy-in, so this has not been going well for Viffer, who has 38K in front of him.
Okay, yeah.
He opens to 2,500 from the hijack with 7-8 of clubs.
Okay.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
Totally cool.
Good for you, Viffer. The loose cannon, who's not going to matter, calls with ace-jack off on the button. That should be a 3-bet when Viffer opens, but, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking of should be a 3-bet, Bobby Sura is in the small blind, so he's put in 200. And there's an $800 straddle on, and frickin' Viffer has opened with a relatively short stack, and Bobby Sura dunks on himself this time.
Nice.
Calls with two jacks from the small blind.
This is a mistake.
It says jack of hearts in my notes, so that's probably incorrect.
Or the deck is messed up. Maybe you got it right, bro. Probably not. Probably it's the two red jacks. Either way, it's not gonna factor too hardcore in this. The point is he has pocket jacks. And yeah, this is as 3-bet a spot as you can almost get in the world, right? Like,
yeah.
Viffer has less than 50 blinds, or less than 50 straddles, I should say. We have jacks. He's opened. There's a squeeze opportunity with it, so that's going to, A, make more money when it goes through, and B, it's going to make our 3-bet less believable, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
if Viffer were to shove, we can comfortably call for 50 straddles, 100 blinds against Viffer of all people, especially shorthanded, especially, you know, with all the things in play. It's a pretty easy call. Like, you don't want to call here and bring in the big blind also and be four-handed out of position to all three other players. Everything about this is a three bet.
I mean, I agree. I certainly 100% agree. But it's Bobby Sura. He probably hasn't really played that much poker. That's the best I can.
Yeah, I think that's probably. I mean, Bobby Sura clearly is, from watching this one hand anyway. And I remember watching the big game. We both watched all these episodes.
Of course.
Back in the day.
It was great. It was so good. Yeah.
Bobby Sura is not like a rank amateur. Like, no. When he's playing, like, he's not like Bill Perkins in the early days or anything like that, where he has no idea what he's doing. He's trying to play tight. He's trying to play well. And he understands enough about all this that. But there's certainly some more of the sophisticated aspects. Something like this, where I think he's going to probably, clearly, I would say, default to more passivity and more playing careful than playing correctly in a spot like this, where maybe he just either doesn't understand he's supposed to do it or isn't willing to pull the trigger because, you know, even when you know you're supposed to do it, it can be hard to pull the trigger if you haven't done it a bunch.
Right. Right. It just, yeah, everything you said makes sense. It's such a, no matter who opened, especially when there's three blinds in there and you're in the worst position, it's just a mandatory three bet.
I mean, we could be five-handed if we flat here pretty easily now that I think about it, right? Because the button called.
Yeah, then we have the big blind who's Scott Seaver.
Who's going to call a fair amount, and the straddle's going to call. I mean, Scott Seaver's got a lot of folds in it,
yeah,
for sure. But the straddle is going to call a lot with a lot of hands, right? Like just a mess of hands.
A mess of hands.
A mess load.
A whole mess.
Yeah.
Well, the straddle is going to call, which is another interesting decision. It's Tony G after Scott Seaver folds. He's got ace-queen of diamonds. This feels less like a mandatory three bet than the jacks out of the small blind, but still feels like three betting would make a lot of sense.
I think it's it's slightly less because we're closing the action. We're suited. If we're off suit, we want to three bet a little bit more because this plays slightly better multi-way. But still, it feels like we're burning money by not three betting.
It's also cheaper to call than it was for Bobby Sura.
That's true, but there's so much money in there. Right? There's $75, $79, $8,700 in there. We've got Ace Queen and Viffer, who's the only guy who we're even threatened by. Like, if we put in a big raise, no one else should be able to call.
Seems like Bobby Sura maybe could.
Turns out he could, but there's no reason for us to think that. Although maybe Tony G understands Bobby Sura's game.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I don't understand really why you wouldn't put in the three bet here either. I'd be looking to do that with this hand a lot.
Yep.
The only reason not to three bet this hand is if you're afraid you can't get it through the initial razor, right?
The other reason, which I'm not entirely sure in 2010, 20G was thinking about it all, was to protect your range and add a little deception to your calling range here and have be underrepped at times when you flop well.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. This is not a terrible hand for that.
Yeah.
But when Viffer opens and there's all that money out there, and again, if Viffer were to put in the big, it's going to shove up. Well, if we make it 11,000 here, 12,000.
Yeah.
Viffer shoves. We're just going to call. We're going to be like, I hope you don't have ace king call. Like, whatever. You only have 38K. It's a call, you know?
Yeah.
I don't love it, but I ain't folding, you know, and that's it.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, it feels like it plays better as a three bet, but it's not nearly as.
No, it's not as egregious where you got the people behind you
right.
as Sura.
I really want a three bet Sura's hand. It makes me feel icky not to. And like, calling with Tony G's hand feels kind of okay, you know?
The thing is, Tony G's rep is such that, like, he's going to get less credit for the three bet.
Yeah.
The strength of his range here, and so that's kind of nice. Now, this is on the lower end of the value part of it. In fact, maybe the very bottom.
Certainly.
Maybe he's doing this with ace-jack sometimes for value, too. But mostly it's going to be ace-queen plus, I think. But that's okay. It still isn't our value range. We can still do it. But I agree with you, certainly. The sort of thing is sort of shockingly bad compared to this, which just feels like we should be three-betting this most of the time.
Yeah. Either way, Tony just calls.
Okay.
And here we are. We've got Viffer with 7-8 of clubs. Loose cannon has ace-jack off. Not going to matter. Bobby Sura's got two jacks. Jack of hearts, jack of clubs. Figured out what the other jack was.
Hey, you did it.
Congratulations to me.
Good job.
Tony G has ace-queen of diamonds. And you have diamonds in your eyes. If you're thinking about nitrogen sports, you know what I'm saying?
Nitro in the sky with diamonds. Like that?
Are you allowed to do that? I guess you did it so poorly that maybe it's okay.
It's also, it's not on YouTube. There's no algorithm searching me out here.
That's true.
So come and get it.
Yeah.
Beatles attorneys.
Yeah, those guys aren't litigious.
It's probably. It's Paul McCartney, I think, owns most of the Beatles songs now. I know Michael Jackson did, but I think Paul McCartney does now.
Oh, really?
Think so. Michael Jackson actually bought up all the Beatles songs after Paul McCartney spent time with Michael Jackson and said, because, you know, they made two big number one hit songs together back in the early 80s. And Paul McCartney said to Michael Jackson, you know, you're making a lot of money right now. I made a lot of money too as a musician, but the real money is in the rights publishing and stuff like that. So the real way to make money is you got to buy up all the most valuable songs. And Michael Jackson took him a little too literally from Paul McCartney's point of view and bought up the entire Beatles catalog.
Wow.
And Paul McCartney spent the next, I think, 40 years buying it back, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know if he has all of them now, but he has at least most of them.
That's intense.
Yeah.
The Beatles songs are very valuable songs.
Yep. They continue to be. Not surprisingly.
Speaking of value,
yes,
Nitrogen Sports.
Yeah, we're doing an ad.
Our monthly tournament provides value for you, the listener.
For all of you, the listeners.
Because when you use the link in the description to sign up, you get access to that monthly tournament. You don't even get to see it in the lobby if you didn't use our link. And that's an always overlay tournament, Jonathan. That's not a thing that people say because they don't really exist.
Right.
Except for on Nitrogen Sports.
It's true.
Where there is an always overlay tournament presented by the Poker Guys.
I like that. The always overlay tournament. We should actually call it that. That's better than the Poker Guys tournament.
It is.
The always overlay tournament. It is literally always an overlay in this tournament because you pay a tenth of a millibit to play. They guarantee 100 millibits?
50 millibits,
that's right. 50 millibits now. And the most players that are allowed to play in this tournament are 300, which means the most you could ever have would be 30 millibits in there. That's at least 20 millibits guaranteed in there. That's $1,000 of extra money. And usually we don't fill up the tournament. Usually there's like 200 players or something. Yeah. So that's like $1,500. They're putting in more money than the player pool is putting in almost every time. It's absurd.
They're putting in a minimum of 40% of the money.
Yeah, and usually 60 to 70% of the money.
It's a damn fine deal.
Sometimes it used to be a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an incredible deal. If somehow you're not playing on this tournament, you need to start. It's free to sign up. As Grant said, you click the link in the show notes, and that's how you get in there. And now you have access to all that stuff when you sign up using that link.
Yep. So get in there, get you some poker. Of course, they also have casino games, sports betting.
Yeah.
They do other cool stuff for you if you use that link, such as fantasy football stuff we've done in the past with them where they've added money to the prize pool. This year, they did an NFL Survivor pool where you get access to a Survivor pool just by using the link.
I got busted out.
Jonathan's sad because he lost.
How did the Giants beat the Saints? Anyway.
They do March Madness things where they add money in for you. It's just a great deal.
It's a great deal. And, you know, someone actually asked on YouTube or somewhere, maybe it was Discord, about Nitrogen saying, like, I don't know if I feel comfortable sending Bitcoin, you know, are these guys, like, I would think anyone who's dealing in Bitcoin is maybe, you know, not safe. And I just replied, we've been with them for 5 years and never a complaint.
Nope, never a complaint. They pay us using their system, and we've never had an issue with that.
But we've got, you know, our community has played a lot on Nitrogen over the years and interacted a lot with them, and no one's ever said we couldn't get our money out. We were robbed. Not once. Ever.
Nope.
Ever.
Nope. And it might be indicative to you that they've been sponsoring us for 5 years, that we have a lot of community on there.
Yep.
Otherwise, why would they still be sponsoring us? So that's a pretty damn fine representation that our community is well taken care of on there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, obviously, if they were screwing over our community, we would not continue to do business with them. Or if we were, we would not claim that they weren't screwing over our community.
No, that would be pretty bold. That would be pretty bold.
We'd say other things about them.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, they're always been rock solid.
All right, speaking of bold, let's see some interesting bold plays that happen here. I don't know if they're going to be good. I think they're not going to be good.
I don't know if I think they're going to be bold either. Let's find out.
Bold might be the wrong word.
Yep.
All right, $11,200 are in the pot. Bobby Sura, two jacks, Tony G, ace, queen of diamonds, Viffer, 7-8 of clubs, other guy, doesn't matter.
Ace, jack off.
Yep. Six of diamonds, eight of diamonds, eight of spades is the flop. Tony G flops the nut flush draw. Viffer flops trips. Bobby Sura is still sitting there with an overpair.
I mean, this is destined for car crash city.
The only thing stopping it from full car crash is that the guy with the best hand right now only started with 38K.
Yes, but you could see even Bobby Sura and Tony G just playing a really big pot here, a lot.
Yeah, you could.
Like a lot.
All right. I actually think this is a pretty interesting spot for both Sura and Tony G as far as potentially leading.
Yes.
Do you think either of them should lead, assuming Sura checks for Tony's?
Okay, I think Sura leading makes a lot of sense. I think both of them leading makes a lot of sense. Now, the only question I would have is to not lead here is because if I think Viffer's just c-betting some crazy high percentage here, like nowadays, this is going to be a check a lot.
By Viffer even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think three ways. I think so. But I don't know if that's necessarily true in 2010 or whenever.
There was a lot more greensteining going on back then.
Yeah, of course, meaning always c-bet. That's the greenstein play. So if I thought Vifor was always c-betting, I wouldn't feel any reason to donk here with these hands. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, if I thought there was any chance at all this was going to check through, I would very comfortably donk with either of these hands and feel great about it and not be interested and be and welcome action, welcome aggression, you know, if Vifor raised or something like that, even though I'd be in a lot of trouble with either of these hands.
Yeah.
But I would not worry about that. I'd be like, okay, whatever.
I think I like the idea of Tony leading a lot more than the idea of Bobby Sura leading.
Because?
If Bobby Sura leads, he's overrepresenting his hand. When he actually has a hand of value, which is something I don't entirely love. Also, if he's trying to repinate, which I don't know why you have to try to repinate when you have jacks.
He wouldn't be trying to repinate.
Okay, he's just trying to rep an
overpair. He's trying to rep a hand he's protecting.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely that. Like, there's a lot, like, if it checks through, there's a lot of bad cards for him, right? There's the diamond, there's the ace, there's the king, there's the queen.
Right, so it's pure equity denial then from Sura's perspective, and you can get called by some weaker hands.
No question.
But not a lot of weaker hands. Just like tens and nines.
And diamonds, and maybe pocket sevens, maybe ace, maybe a six can call us, 5-6 suited, ace.
If Bobby
suited.
Sura leads into the field and you know anything about Bobby Sura, you're folding pocket sevens, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know if that's true or not. You're basing it all on this one hand, right?
I remember him playing.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was tight.
I mean, he just called the jacks.
Yeah.
That already is telling us something about him. So maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe we can just find a fold. Or maybe we call once and fold the turn if we decide to. But maybe we just fold.
All of this to say, it feels to me like Sura leading would be fine, but checking also feels fine. And his leading doesn't feel as holistically perfect as Tony's would. And I'll explain that in a second. Because for Bobby, it feels mostly like equity denial, which is fine, but it's not that great. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Compared to what... Yeah, go ahead.
Compared with Tony, who has all of the eights in his range. All of them.
Yes.
And by the way, he's mostly fine if he gets called or raised. Sometimes there's a full house out there, so
whatever.
Be it. But like, getting called is not a nightmare for ace, queen of diamonds, but getting everybody to fold while you have a really good job representing an eight feels like a decent thing to do.
I mean, I think getting called is more than just not a nightmare. I think we're completely fine with getting called.
Yes.
And welcome getting called. We're almost always have like positive equity. Like, I think Tony G, without looking, almost certainly has more equity than Sura does in this hand, even though Sura's got the overpair right now.
Right.
Right? So that's pretty good.
And the game tree for Tony G in the future, if he gets called, is really nice either way. If it's a diamond, he gets to keep betting for value. If it's not a diamond, he can keep repping an eight, and it makes perfect sense.
Uh-huh. He can also hit an ace or a queen, to be clear, to often take the lead.
Yeah.
It's a good spot.
So I really like leading as Tony G.
Yep.
You agree?
I like that too. Well, the thing is, Tony G has more, like, Bobby Sura has a particular outcomes that he's really looking for. Like, he's mostly looking for folds, honestly, or at least to charge these guys and doesn't want everyone to stick around. If Tony G bets, he's fine with everyone sticking around.
Yeah.
Right? And he's also really happy with a fold.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more good things that come out of Tony G's lead, where Sura also is like, well, I hope I don't get raised, and I hope this, and I hope that, and, you know. Tony G's, like, not afraid of much on the turn, either. Like, he's not afraid of the diamond. He's got the diamonds. Like, the six pairing is bad. That's about it. Maybe the eight tripping is bad.
Yeah, that's also bad,
Okay, fine, but that's it. Like, those are very obvious for him.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's easier. The thing about Sura is he gets, by betting here, donking, really. He gets to try and negate some of the positional disadvantage he's at, right?
Yeah, but for him also, another problem here is, like, sure, you can just go with it against Vifor for 35K because it's freaking Vifor. But Tony G is still, he's Tony G, but like, if he raises you, that's a tough spot with jacks.
Yep.
It's a really tough spot.
Yeah, and this is part of the reason why the three bet works better for him, by the way. Now, Tony G was going to call this three bet, I think, with ace queen suited anyway.
Probably.
But whatever. The point is, then now we can remove eights from Tony G's range almost always instead of keeping them in.
Yeah. Yeah. So ultimately, I think Sura's check feels more normal and fine. Yeah. I expect a lot of players would check in Tony G's seat. I would check sometimes too.
Yep.
But a lead feels a little better, actually. I think I like a lead better.
I like a lead for sure, as long as we're also really leading some eights. We have to actually lead eights sometimes as Tony G.
Of course.
And I worry that we're not probably doing that very often.
But it's a really easy board to lead eights on, though.
Yes.
Like, you're very happy to lead eights on a wet board like this.
Yep. Again, it'll also come down to, like, do we think Vifor's just going to c-bet a lot? And if we think he's c-betting some really high percentage of the time, 85% plus, something like that, then we can check and look to check raise a fair amount. Check call if we want to, meaning, like, if Sir, as we can see, if Vifor bets, is not going to fold. Everyone flopped well, right?
Yeah.
So it's reasonable to think it goes check, check, Vifor bets, Sura, if Sura calls, for example, Now Tony G can decide to raise, but he can also decide to just call if he's afraid of Sura.
Yep.
Those seem like a very straightforward plan for Tony G as well.
Mm-hmm.
But raising's fine with this hand in this spot.
Yep. Well, we're not going to know if Vifer's going to c-bet with wild hands on this board, like ace, four of spades or something, because he doesn't have that. He has trips.
Yeah.
And he is going to bet with it, which makes plenty of sense after Tony checks. Bet 7K, pure value.
Yep.
Any argument for raising is Bobby Sura.
There's got to be at least an argument here for raising, right? The problem with raising is that we are, sort of like you were saying before, we're kind of repping the wrong range. Like, we have a good hand.
Yeah.
But now we're, like, repping trip eights a lot. Like, we have 7-8 of clubs.
Right.
And we don't. We're not trying to fold out a better hand than jacks if we were raised, right? We'd be trying to deny equity and get value from worse hands, which is the reason to raise. Now, we're out of position. This all way we can also knock Tony G out a lot. Like, if Sura raises right here, I don't think he can fold Tony G out anyway with this hand that Tony G has, but a lot of Tony G's hands would have to fold. If Tony G had, like, worse diamonds, he might just fold them.
Or an open-ender.
Right. Or, I mean, Tony G might call with ace-clean not of diamonds because he's Tony G and they're overs, like, you know, once. And by raising here, we get to knock that out, too. There's a lot of value to raising here. Yeah. Also, with Vifer being relatively short.
But I kind of like calling better.
Yeah, I know.
It's just better.
I know. Also, we like the idea of giving Vifer. When we call, Tony G usually folds, and we get to give Vifer another shot to, like, swing at it, you know?
Which Vifer does. I mean, I'm always reminded of the hand against Phil Ruffin, who is a casino owner who played on High Stakes Poker Season 7, I guess it was, who, like, of all of the rich guys they got for High Stakes Poker, maybe knew the least about poker of all of them. Hmm. I mean, maybe there was a guy in season one or something.
Oh, those guys were so bad.
They were pretty bad. But this Phil Ruffin really, really clearly had not played much poker in his life. It was just kind of messing around because he had too much money. And Vifer tried to bluff this guy in ways that were just like, what are you doing, Vifer?
I mean, the board was ace, king, XXX. Ruffin had king three off, call the raise on turn. I bet the flop, call the raise on turn, call the huge, like $100,000 bet on the river or something like that, which is like, second pair, no kicker. And
kind of
good.
Had a face of like not really knowing why he was calling. Just like, I guess I have a pair.
Well, remember also, Vifer bets the river. Ruffin starts putting in the chips. He doesn't say call. He just starts putting in like, and it's a, and also he does the chips in small stacks.
Yeah.
So, and then Vifer like turns over his hand. So Ruffin can see that he wins. He continues to put the chips out as if he needs to do that. Like, that's how little he's played. It really shows up as how little he's played.
And Vifer's trying to bluff this guy with nine deuce off, by the way, for no real reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that was a mistake.
That's who we're dealing with Vifer.
To be fair, Vifer will also make checks at times. It isn't that he's just wildly aggressive.
Of course.
But he will take some big, big swings. We've seen him do it.
Of course. I'm just saying from the perspective of a player like Bobby Sura, who Vifer is going to recognize as an amateur.
Yes.
You have to hold on a lot of the time.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Anyway, Sura's just going to call. That feels like the right play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get to some weird stuff.
I'm ready for the weirdness. I mean, you would think, I'm setting us up here.
Yeah.
You would think Tony G only has two obvious choices, and how weird could it really get? He can call, fine. I mean, I don't hate that. He can raise, and whatever amount he raises, how bad can it be? Anywhere from the min raise to the all in and anything in between, how bad or weird could it be is what you would think. And yet, please.
All right. Let's talk about why raising might be the better of the plays between raising and calling, because I think it is. Do you agree?
I'm trying to think. Well, the only reason... Okay, I have one reason not to raise, and it's Bobby Sura's range.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about that.
You're not?
He called out of the small blind when there was a straddle on.
Right.
I don't think he has many eights.
No, I don't either. I think he's got a lot of hands he can not fold.
I think he can fold jacks.
I mean, that's an absurd thing to target as Tony G.
I think
Sura's got like nines and tens. I wouldn't even put him on jacks, but I'm putting him on nines and tens pretty hardcore right now, or diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Diamonds, we love him to have.
Yeah.
I mean, nines and tens, we have reasonable equity against anyway, though.
Yeah.
Is the point. I'm not too worried about him having an eight. I agree with you at all. Like, I guess he can have a little 6-8, 7-8 clubs kind of a thing like Vifer actually has, but I wouldn't be worried about that.
I would think a player like Bobby Sura, based on what we've seen of him, if you watch the big game, based on what you saw him, he would be overfolding one pair of hands on this board. And as Tony, we can still do the same thing we could have done by leading. We have all of the eights in our range.
We do.
What an opportunity.
I mean, that's a very good point. And the truth is, if I'm saying, oh no, Sura has nines and tens, I may not fold, we are a favorite against nines and tens.
Yeah.
Not a big favorite, but we're a favorite. It's fine to get it all in right now with nines and tens, and if we have any fold equity on top of that, It's a bonus. We don't need any fold equity.
And it's not actually clear how deep Sura and Tony G are. Yes. We know Viffer is short, but assuming Viffer just has some random hand and folds, if Tony G raises to something like 20K, they might still have playback where Sura calls with one of these overpairs and Tony can bet again and really put pressure on.
We've seen Tony do that a million times. Yeah. Bet 50,000 on the river with those two 25K chips as he likes to do. And it's going to be hard for Sura to call with actually any hand. It's going to be hard for a lot of people to call unless they know Tony G well and are just like, I'm holding on. I don't care.
I think it's a tough spot, even if it's you or me sitting there and we know Tony G well. Like, he absolutely has all of these eights in his range.
He does, but of course he has all the diamonds too.
Yeah.
And we would know that, and I think we just have to put the money in.
Right.
We just like force ourselves to. So that's what I would do.
So it feels like a good spot for a raise, unless we're entirely wrong about Viffer's c-betting frequency. Mm. Viffer may... Like, if we think Viffer has a really low c-betting frequency, like he's only c-betting over pairs and trips, then maybe
diamonds.
Yeah, and then maybe it's not good enough.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer to that is, but since Tony G checked, he must think Viffer's c-betting a fair amount.
Yes.
And so with that in mind, I think overall I like a raise too.
Yeah.
I do. I'm not so sure Bobby Sura is going to fold nines to a raise here. He's also got, you know, he made $45 million, and he may be enough of an amateur that I don't know if he's going to overfold. Maybe he's going to overcall because he's got money, and what the fuck does he know? But again, we can live with that. That's a perfectly okay outcome. That's a plus EV outcome still.
Yeah.
So who cares? It's not wildly plus EV, but we can take it and be fine with it.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Tony G folds.
I actually forgot that he folded. We just talked about this so much. That was very, very nicely done. I can't believe it. It's crazy. He takes a lot of time, and he starts talking about Sura's hand.
Yeah, which is completely inappropriate three-handed, but Tony G does that stuff. It's fine.
Doesn't he say, like, what, you got nines over there? Yeah. And Sura even says, like, you're so good.
Right.
Now, Sura could...
He could just say whatever. Yeah.
But he means it, clearly, because he has jacks. This is all with Viffer still sitting in the hand. Viffer's got to be like, this is incredible. This is so crazy. And then Tony G throws his hand away.
Yeah.
Okay. We need to at least talk about this for a second.
Of course.
Why?
All right.
Would Tony G throw his hand away?
I have a theory. I'm not saying this is good or it's not going to exonerate Tony G from poker hell, but this is my best theory. All right.
Yeah.
He's talking to Sura. He's not super concerned about Sura. Like, I think he is accurately putting Sura on a range. I think he knows that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he probably, like the way you were talking about, isn't so worried about that range. Like, he's okay with getting it in against that range. He's also okay with them folding, right? So it's more about Viffer.
Okay.
So the theory is that Viffer actually does not c-bet these types of boards that frequently in three-way pots and would only really do so with the nut flush draw or trips. And Tony knows he doesn't have the nut flush draw, and that means he has trips, and he's not getting the right price against trips.
What are you talking about? Why isn't he getting the right price against trips?
Because he doesn't know which trips he has to avoid if the diamonds come. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, you can, if Viffer, and you know this, right? Viffer has an eight in his hand, and he has trips. Like he does, there are very obvious cards that would go along with that, right? It would be mostly the nine and the seven, maybe a 10, maybe a six, but look. Oh, no, actually, maybe a six.
Six is on the board.
Yeah, there's a six on the board, but there's other sixes. You're right. The point is he'd have a full house already. Yeah, that'd be bad. But like mostly it'd be 7-8 and 9-8, right?
Yeah.
And maybe ace 8 suited.
Yeah.
Those are the things we'd have to worry about. By the way, Viffer doesn't have a lot of money. It's okay anyway.
I know. I tried, but
yeah. The only thing he can really be reasonably afraid of here, I think, is in fact, you don't hate these guys having trips. If a diamond comes, they may call it off anyway because they have trips. Like, it also makes us money a lot. You know, it goes both ways. Tony seems like he's afraid of Bobby Sura based on how he's acting, and like he's afraid somehow Bobby Sura has sixes full.
Yeah.
That's how he's acting, because he's only looking at Sura. He only talks to Sura. He says it's going to be a big fold. He shows it to Scott Seaver, and then he throws it away, and it makes no sense to me. This is an awful fold. This is maybe the worst play I've ever seen Tony G make.
Yeah, I mean, I can't defend it any further than I already have.
Yeah, you tried.
I mean, I imagine there's no folding if the board's not paired, right?
How could he?
Yeah, like... So it has to be something to do with him really fearing that Sura has sixes full or Viffer has sixes full, or thinking that Viffer is really tight with his c-betting range.
It doesn't matter how tight Viffer is with his c-betting range. It doesn't matter. Look, he talks to Sura, and Sura does look very comfortable, right?
Yeah.
Sura thinks he's in good shape with two jacks here.
Right.
Right? So that's reasonable for Sura, but Sura could be comfortable with two nines. Tony G even says two nines. Sura can have, like, 9, 10 of diamonds also.
Yeah.
Like... He could have hands that he feels really good about here. You know, king jack of diamonds. Whatever, jack 10 of diamonds. These are all hands that are in so much trouble against Tony G, it's crazy. Like, the implied odds are extraordinary for Tony G.
Yeah, no, it's a bad fold.
By the way, Viffer is betting flush draws and trips, and maybe not even overpairs. Maybe we could decide, although that seems unlikely, but let's say that's true. What about every time he's got a flush draw? Don't we want to have the nut flush draw and put in some money against that?
In my cockamamie theory, I said Viffer's only betting the nut flush draw.
Oh, you did say that. That's true. But that's crazy, right? Of course. You'd also bet king, jack of diamonds, king, ten of diamonds, jack, ten of diamonds, queen, ten of diamonds.
Of course he would.
Nine, ten of diamonds. Of course he would.
Yeah. I was trying to find a way.
I know. No, that was a good try. That was smart to put that in as the nut flush draw. That was smart. To like try and head this little bit.
Yeah, no, this is just a bad fold. I mean, it turns out that he's in reasonably bad shape against Viffer, but it's not that bad of shape.
I mean, it's call 7,000 shape, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Close the action, calling 7,000, see what the turn brings, and hope to hit a diamond.
Or raise, by the way.
Or raise, yeah. That's fine. Like, yeah, we raise. Obviously, Viffer's going to get it in with us.
Yeah.
Probably if Viffer does, Sura doesn't. Okay, we wished it was the other way, but we can hit diamonds. By the way, we can also hit running aces and running queens, which happens a little bit.
By the way, we run it twice and we chop up Sura's money most of the time.
Yeah, like whatever, man. Yeah. This is such a straightforward thing. I actually thought maybe the card reader got it wrong, one of those, because it's like, how Tony G can't really fold ace queen. And then they show him looking at the hand, and they actually go to the whole card camera to show us ace queen, I think because they can't believe it either. And he gives it to Scott, and because he can't believe he's folding it. And Scott looks at it. I think they show it again when Scott looks at it. So they're like, no, this is real. It feels like it's one of those things where Tony G's experiencing this, and then suddenly Freddy Krueger's going to come out of the table and kill him, because it's got to be a nightmare. It can't be actual life.
Well, it is. It's what happened. Tony G folded.
I mean, I guess it was time to get into politics, because, wow, this is a huge mistake.
He needs to get on his bike.
This is monumentally bad.
Yeah,
and I love Tony G, and I think he does a lot of things really wonderfully, but this is the worst thing I've ever seen him do in poker.
I mean,
I've seen him humiliate many men.
I think he might be inclined to hero fold a bit too much. He just found a spot where it didn't make any sense. Like, there is that really incredible hand that's actually in our book, I think, where he folds the set of fives, and ultimately I thought it was a great fold and very difficult fold. I think you were on the fence. I don't remember how we ended up on that.
I'm not sure if it was a great fold. It was the correct fold based on what Eric Seidel actually had, but every time Eric Seidel has not a set of nines there, then it's a terrible fold, and it's the same problem
as this. But Seidel basically has to... go read the chapter.
Yeah, like we can argue about it. I understand why...
You actually came around to my way of thinking.
Of course I did.
Yeah.
Of course I did. But I'm saying that, like, also maybe Tony G's logic wasn't nearly as pristine as you're thinking.
That's possible.
As we thought, actually, I should say. I shouldn't just say you. And he folded for really bad reasons, right? Like this. This points me in a different direction of, like, maybe that was a bad fold, actually, you know? Anyway, we don't have to go any further with it.
Well, you know.
But you should read that in the book. It's a great book, and it's a good chapter.
It's a phenomenal book.
It's called How Can He Fold, and it's by us. It's on Amazon. Just saying.
And it's great.
Anyway.
We haven't talked about that for a while.
No.
All right. Tony G folds.
Okay.
Here we are. Bobby Sura, two jacks, in big trouble against Viffer's trip eights. 25,200 in the pot.
Okay.
The turn is the nine of hearts.
Okay. If we were Tony G and we called, we'd be like, well, that's one of the full house cards.
Yeah. Time to check fold, maybe, if Viffer bets again.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Anyway, we don't know what Tony G would have done because he's out.
Yeah.
Out of the hand. At this point, it feels like a mandatory check for Sura, right?
I don't see why we would bet if we didn't raise the flop.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony G's out, so eights are much less likely, but checking seems fine.
Okay. I think this is a really interesting question for Viffer. Should Viffer bet again?
My initial thought is probably he should. Now, are you saying this because it's a nine specifically?
Yes.
And Bobby Sura has a lot of pocket nines, or for
like what is reasons? He targeting to get called by?
He's targeting diamonds. And he's targeting overpairs, right?
Okay.
One pair of hands. I could just be one pair of hands also. Like if Sura had 9-10 of X,
Bobby Sura is folding that on the flop.
I'm just aware that you keep saying these things about Bobby Sura as if everyone knows all these things about Bobby Sura when, like, we know a lot about Bobby Sura now, but did anyone know this at the time? Did Viffer know anything about Bobby Sura at the time? I think you're being really generous with information here that isn't necessarily...
Okay.
Wasn't necessarily...
Let's assume you're in Bobby Sura's seat and you have 9-10 of clubs.
Yeah.
So no backdoor flush draw. And Viffer bet 7 into 11K and...
Oh, I'm folding.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, of course I am.
All right.
Bobby Stewart's not a pro.
Okay.
Like a lot of players. Bill Perkins is calling all day.
There. Of course he is. So, Bobby Sura, from my memory, erred on the side of caution.
Right, but I'm saying that Viffer couldn't see the whole card cameras. He didn't know what Bobby Sura was and wasn't necessarily doing so much.
I think it's really ambitious to stake your claim on this hill of 9-10 for some reason. Like, why are you doing that?
I'm more talking about the idea that will Bobby Sura definitely fold one pair is what I'm asking. And I'm saying I don't know that we know that. It doesn't have to be 9-10. It could even go back to like a hand like pocket sevens, which I agree is probably a fold on the flop. But I don't know. Like, there are a lot of rich guys who are bad at poker who show up in games like this and absolutely are calling pocket sevens on that flop. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, we block that, so that's a slight problem for
okay,
that.
Okay, but again, I'm not talking about pocket sevens, I'm talking about the idea of one pair here.
Okay.
Right, which of course we want to get called by, and we'd love to put more money in before a scare card comes.
All right, but I'm not necessarily against that, but I think it's worth questioning. Mm-hmm. Like, sevens feel unlikely for multiple reasons.
Yep, I agree. I mean, there's three combos max anyway, and
we don't have to entirely discount 9-10, but honestly, I would.
Sure,
if I were Viffer,
I would mostly except for 9-10 of diamonds, which is obviously not folding.
Yes.
Yep.
And then there's tens,
sure,
and jacks, which we're not sure if they're there pre-flop. Should be three bets most of the time.
I would question them being there.
Nines feel like the most likely hand that would have played pre-flop and the flop this way.
Yeah, even nines like might be a three bet a lot, but not as much as tens and jacks.
It's more likely than tens or jacks.
Yeah.
Diamonds are
very much in there.
Are in there, but also are more likely to raise than a one pair hand on the flop.
Yeah, but again, if Bobby Sura is an amateur, which he is,
yeah,
a lot of amateurs. Amateurs usually play bidirectional. Is that what I'm trying to say? No, they play bidirectional. Is not what I mean. They play one speed when they're in a spot like this with diamonds on the flop, where they're either always raising or always calling, and they almost never mix it up too much. You know,
I guess we don't know which one,
right.
Bobby Sura
but
is.
I'm saying like it's possible he always is calling with diamonds. It's possible he's always raising. You're right.
Okay, but if we're just going to go ahead and get out of the weird convoluted brainland that we're in,
yeah, sure.
And think about what is the most likely thing to happen, raising nines or raising diamonds, it would be raising diamonds, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. No question. I think as Viffer, we don't have to worry about like getting cooler or anything. You're just worried we're going to fold out Bobby Sura? Is that the concern?
I am concerned that we're entering near game theory disaster mode if we make a big bet here.
Ah, okay. Like, also, diamonds will fold a lot now.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have a straight draw with them.
Yeah.
Maybe the nut diamonds will stick around.
It's okay for diamonds to fold, obviously. That's a fine outcome, but...
Yeah, but that we don't really want them to.
It's not like a huge win for us.
I mean, I think what we should be doing is... I think we should bet as Viffer so far. Maybe you'll talk me out of it.
Okay.
But so far, I think we should still be betting. Stack to pot really demands we put a bet in, I think, almost always here when we've got a hand this good.
Okay. Once again, I just have to push on what we're targeting.
Well... I think we want to bet an amount that is incorrect for diamonds to call, but not so much that it's clearly wrong for diamonds to call. Meaning like, and even an amateur is going to be like, well, I have to fold now my diamonds, but I want to bet enough so that way the odds are not actually there for like a flush
draw. So like 18K into 25?
If we have 36 left, so there's only...
We have 28 left.
Oh, wow. So we leave. That sounds about right. So, 18K will definitely... Yeah, the implied odds just aren't there for him.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Something like that.
It's kind of weird to leave ourselves 10K back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just don't worry about it. And we always put it in on the river no matter what card comes.
Are you not concerned that you're only really playing this hand against diamonds and not thinking about the other hands?
If Sura somehow does have an overpair,
yeah,
then I expect he will not fold it, like tens and jacks here. I expect he will probably continue. And... I don't know how often he has those overpairs. I would expect three bets a lot with them, even though he did not three bet jacks here. I would expect jacks is a fine hand to get money against here. And in fact, if Sura is sitting there and thinking about it, which I don't think he would be, but it's hard for him to have a much better hand than jacks here.
Yeah.
Really, really, really hard. Maybe impossible.
He maybe can have sixes full slow played.
Maybe he can. Or yeah, okay. Eight, sixes
quad
full.
Eights, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But if we do it by combos, wow.
Yeah.
Like there's... Four combos of things maybe better than pocket jacks. And you could argue he's not really ever supposed to have pocket jacks even here.
No.
This is too good. So I hear what you're saying about targeting. I would personally be more... My inclination in these spots... And again, maybe I'm being unfair to Bobby Sura a little bit. I'll acknowledge this. But like against someone who's not really good at poker and is not like hasn't been around a lot necessarily. And Bobby Sura's not awful by any means, but it's clearly not a pro. is just to bet a lot when you've got, when I've got good hands, and just go for value. And like, mostly you get paid off by people, like mostly. So like, just like keep trying to get money out of this guy. Let's try and get it all in. Let's not set it. If we check here, I'm really concerned about getting all of it, getting the full double, when we just are going to be able to get the full double a lot by betting here. We could bet small if we're worried about it too. If we think there aren't many diamonds, we could bet small, try and get called by all those more rinky-dink one pair of hands, if any exist. Again, I don't know if any exist. I'll acknowledge this. But maybe they do. And if they do, and we bet small enough, maybe they call.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel super likely, though, even as I say it. I don't really buy that. Like, I think a big bet does better against the small pairs than the small bets, actually. All right, what are your thoughts after I said all that?
I think, ultimately, Sir does check. If I were in Viffer's seat, I would usually default to betting.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth questioning that.
Okay.
And I, against a player like Sura, whose range is relatively face up.
What if Sura has an 8? He could have 8-7 suited. Oh, wait, we have 8-7 suited. That doesn't help.
He never has a worse 8 than
us. He doesn't have 8-5 suited. Okay, never mind. Yeah, forget it. For a second, I thought we had a full house, and it was going to be great. Never mind.
Would have been wonderful.
Yeah, it doesn't help us as much. Okay. So your point is just, it's diamonds, really, or it's pairs, and the pairs are pocket 9s, pocket 10s. If that.
Yeah, and you wouldn't really expect them that often.
No. The good news is if it's pocket nines, we can just sort of sigh, roll our eyes, and lose a big pot to them, right?
But we have to be able to get value from the other hands.
I agree. So we need to come up with an amount to bet that's right against the diamonds. And 18,000 probably isn't right. I don't know what is. Maybe we need to think. Maybe we want to bet small against the diamonds to make sure they stick around.
I mean, we're okay with diamonds folding, though. It's not the end of the world if diamonds fold. They have equity against us.
They don't have a lot, though. They have like 20% equity.
Yeah.
Less, actually, even, because we have full house outs.
Yeah.
So they have like 17% equity. So we could probably bet like half pot just fine.
Yeah, it's just, it's hard to pull the trigger on these sizings when there's another street to play, and you'll be left with a weird amount.
Yeah. And also, we do give him probably the right odds to call if he thinks he can get the rest of it on the river if we bet half pot.
Yeah.
Going back to more like a $17,000 bet is probably better.
Yeah.
Okay, let's bet like 2/3 of the pot. Fine.
Well, Viffer moves in.
Okay.
28K into 25-2, which seems like I could find myself doing that for sure.
You know, if you think you're getting called by all the one pair of hands that are calling any whatever amount we're betting, and the diamonds are either going to make a mistake by calling or fold, all that seems fine.
Okay.
So I don't hate the shove at all.
No, I think it seems fine. It's just, I wonder if checking is better, but I also am fine with the shove. All right, Bobby Sura. I know what Jonathan's going to say.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to say.
It's Viffer. This is the third best hand we show up with and like the 8th best combo, yeah. So we have to call.
It feels like a very obvious call to me.
Yeah.
Do we have the Jack of Diamonds in our hand?
No, which is good.
Even better.
Yeah.
Oh my God, let's call.
And lose.
Let's snap call and lose. What do you mean lose? We got 2 outs, bro. Let's go. Okay. We hit that. That's 4%.
Well, we know the loose cannon folded a jack, though.
Oh.
We saw him do it.
Okay, with 2%. Still, these things happen about 1 of every 50 times. Obviously, we're calling here.
No, he
folded. He has a pot-sized bet left. Of course, we're calling.
He folded.
It seems a little tight to fold here. Is it not a little tight?
It seems a little tight. Let's try to see if we can get into Bobby Sura's head the way we tried to do it with Tony G.
Let's do it.
Distribution is probably not a word that he's aware of. And I don't think I was aware of the word in 2010 as far as a poker reference. So we can't really fault him for not using distribution. So we're trying to think more categorically then. And we're thinking like, okay.
Does he have it?
Does all of Viffer's value beat me is question one.
I think the answer
is probably yes. Maybe he does this with tens. But
I think he does it with tens.
Yeah, but so be it. You know, like most of his value beats us.
Yes.
Right? In a big way. Like we have 2 outs against all of it.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's a problem.
Yep. When we're behind, we're in a lot of trouble.
Do we expect Viffer to do this with diamonds?
Yes.
Of course we do.
Of course we do.
We have to call.
Do we expect Viffer to do it with other things, like maybe weird straight draws? Could Viffer ever have Queen 10 here, take a shot on the flop because he's Viffer? I don't know if he would, but maybe. And now turn the gutter, and he's like, I mean, if ever there was a card to bluff shove on
maybe.
With this hand, I don't know if that's true, but I could at least construct that in my head as like, well, a little bit, maybe there's some of that too. He's Viffer. He'll show up with some weird stuff that makes no sense. We've seen it.
How bad this fold is goes back to Viffer's c-betting on the flop range.
Yes.
If it's tighter, the fold is a little bit better. But still, you have to call because of the diamonds that would play this way.
Even if he just has not diamonds, we can call.
Yeah.
We're doing fine.
Yeah.
So this is just a call.
It's a call because Vifor do this with diamonds. Now we can add modern theories in, and distribution makes this a call. I mean, sure, we have nines full. We have three combos of nines full. But if we have this hand in our range sometimes, it's one of the top combos we have.
It just is. Like, we have to fold all our diamonds that called on the flop, yeah. Right? And sometimes we're just going to call diamonds on the flop, especially three ways with Tony G in there with right. a bunch of eights in his range. So, yeah, and this bet folds out all our diamonds. So, like, even more so, like, we just, I guess maybe not the best diamonds. Maybe sometimes we call with the ace-x of diamonds, hoping Vifor has worse diamonds. That's getting a little fancy. I don't know if we're really going to do that, but we could. But that's it. Like, we just have to call with jacks here.
Now that I'm thinking about it, distribution-wise.
Yeah.
This is making a big leap, an assumption that Sura would call preflop with this hand.
Okay.
But is this a better hand to call with than 7-9 of clubs?
By the way, pocket sevens comes back into play for the same reason, yeah. Right?
7-9 of clubs is better because we block nines full.
Of course it is, but I just don't imagine we're ever showing up with 7-9 of clubs. But pocket sevens is interesting and maybe makes the flop a little bit more of an interesting potential call. Three ways not as good out of position.
If we get here with pocket sevens, we do block one of Vifor's most likely eights, which is the one he actually has.
Yeah, which is nice.
So maybe those hands are better to call with than jacks.
Maybe. Maybe.
So hold up a second here. Because distribution-wise, we do have to fold some things, right?
Yes.
I guess we can fold all our diamond draws. That's easy.
Yep.
Beyond that, is 10s the next hand that we fold? Or is jacks? Because 10s actually blocks some stuff that we want to block more. Like, you could fathom Vifor having 10-8, but not really jack-8 that often.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess we'd rather have 10s. It's weird because 10s loses to jacks.
Yeah.
Jacks beats 10s. And, like, Vifor might be shoving pocket 10s here, right?
You could also fathom Vifor having 10-7.
Yes, and turn the straight.
Yeah.
Interesting. You can fathom it, especially because we're six-handed.
Yeah.
And there's a straddle, and it's Vifor.
Yeah.
Like, it's not crazy. Do we know where we are in the big game at this point? Like, are we as near the end or in the middle? Because, like, if it's the very end, and if the loose cannon is in a desperate spot, Vifor wouldn't have all those hands.
It's impossible to know.
I will say this. Vifor opening 7-8 of clubs means it's unlikely we're at the end with the desperate. Because that's where the big, for people who don't know, the loose cannon is the amateur player who's been just gifted $100,000. They're shoving a lot at the end if they're short, because they have to show a profit to make any money. So Vifor just can't open 8-7 of clubs here very often. Okay. So let's assume it's not that.
Yeah.
Not an issue. Okay.
Obviously,
so you're starting to wonder if jacks is the worst hand we can have.
Yeah. Here. Obviously, something in our favor is that we don't have the jack of diamonds. Jacks with the jack of diamonds.
That's awful.
Jacks with the jack of diamonds may literally be the worst hand we have.
Yeah.
And we are supposed to fold it.
Mm. So you're asking, basically, would we rather have sevens and tens? We know we can actually show up with tens. We wonder if we can show up with sevens.
Yeah.
I think it's at least possible for us to show up with sevens here.
Yeah.
I think we can call with sevens on the flop a fair amount. I don't think it's insane. Sevens block 7-8. Tens block 10-8 and 10-7.
Yeah.
Those hands without a diamond in them feel like the best of the best. Those feel better than jacks, I guess.
Yeah.
Even though we do lose to some of the pocket tens of the world, like the overpair of the world. Or pocket, I guess, we don't block that.
Yeah.
You know, like, we love him to have pocket tens if we have jacks, obviously.
Yeah.
Interesting question. Jeez. Huh.
Now, it's possible that all of these pairs should be calls because we have enough diamonds we can fold.
Right.
That really goes back to our check-raising range on the flop. If we're check-raising diamonds all the time, like you speculated some amateurs might just always check-raise diamonds, then we really have to fold the jacks.
Right, of course, because we don't have any of those diamonds. But assuming we do have the diamonds, we're one of those amateurs who just calls with all their draws, which is reasonable, I guess. We have to fold pretty much all of those unless we want to get sticky with the nut flush draw and maybe even a straight draw to go along with it.
Like, or maybe any
seven of diamonds.
Any 9x of diamonds that we have, we can call too,
of course. We can. Yeah. That's right. But that's really should just be ace, nine of diamonds and 9-10 of diamonds.
Yeah.
But maybe we can have those.
Unless he has 9-7 suited in his range, which then that adds more hands that are better than jacks to call with. All of the 9-7 suiteds.
Right. But again, I don't think we should think he has that.
Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, some people will definitely have that.
Yeah.
It's a pretty bad call from the small blind.
Yes, it is.
Especially with the straddle.
Yes, it
is. Even without the straddle, it's pretty bad. But with the straddle, it's pretty awful.
Yeah.
Extra awful. Huh. So I think because we're just going to... I believe we're going to show up with diamonds a lot. So I think we just then have to... This is just going to be a hand we're going to have to call with anyway, is my belief. But I'm curious to see if Danny was able to pull this off with the solver, because it's three-handed for a lot of it. What the solver thinks about this and like where jacks actually fall according to the solver.
That'd that'll be interesting. I imagine the solver will agree with us that having the jack of diamonds is significantly worse than not.
I'm believing the solver's going to be like, snap call.
Probably. The solver always snap calls.
Yeah, it's true. Even when it's close, the solver's like, well, that's a snap, though.
Yeah.
It's marginal, but it's a snap. It's a marginal snap, obviously.
Oh, it's a marginal snap. This is a simple marginal snap. Anyway, is this an indictment of Viffer's play that Sura folds jacks?
I don't know if it's an indictment of Viffer or an indictment of Sura. I don't know. I don't think it's an indictment of Viffer. We know Viffer can show up with crazy stuff.
Yeah.
He's got a reputation. He looks like a crazy guy. By the way, he does an awesome thing. Where Viffer... Okay. Sura says he has jacks, pushes the cards forward, but they're still under his hand, and is clearly in folding motion. And Viffer says, dealer, that's a muck.
Yeah.
That's a mucked hand. And he does it with a little sardonic smile on his face. But he's not like, ha, 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 I'm joking. I think he's trying to talk Sura into like, I'm trying to get them to steal your hand now that you have jacks and I know it. I'm trying to get you to fold. I love it. I think it's a pretty sweet play. I mean, it's you could argue it's an angle. Like if Sura actually then pulled the hand back and called, you could argue that's an angle.
I don't feel like that's a bad angle because if you are going to push your hand forward as if to fold and then change your mind on it, that's an angle in itself.
Like, yeah, you're doing like, oh, I got new information.
Yeah.
Like, that's up to you then to decide if that information's good or bad. I agree. No, I think it's a great play by Sura, by Viffer to try one last, like it's a Hail Mary, but why not? You're free rolling it, right? Yeah. Like he's folding. He's clearly folding. So let's see if we can get him to call here where he's drawing almost dead.
But of course, that didn't work out. Sura folded.
Sura folds anyway, and like doesn't seem to think anything of it. Like that doesn't throw him off.
Viffer made very little money on this hand for what he should have based on his opponent's hands.
I mean, he should have been all in with Tony G, like almost certainly.
Yeah.
And maybe even we could have had a really big three-way pot sometimes.
I mean, he could have lost it all against Tony G, but also by the time the turn comes, he's a huge favorite against Tony G.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. What a spot.
Yeah, but not for Viffer. Anyway, let's see what the solver had to say.
Okay.
All right, so that was obviously a weird one. Let's find out what the solver had to say about it. This was done by Danny Sprung. If you want to see more of a write-up from Danny, check out Discord. It's a fun place to be.
Yeah.
Happy times are ahead if you join the Discord. Anyway, so because it's three ways, the solver doesn't really like that. So Danny had to kind of do a little magician work and remove Tony G from the hand, effectively. So
I mean, Tony G removed himself.
Himself from the hand. And that seems okay to me because, obviously, the solver's not going to like what Tony G did. Like, there's no chance the solver would like it. The one thing that it does maybe change is the flop actions of the other two players.
I think it does.
But there's nothing we can really do about that. So we'll see what the solver had to say about what we did end up getting here.
It'll be fine.
So I think the most notable thing here, because it mostly thinks that the flop was played normally, is that Viffer's 8-7 always checks the turn as the solver, which is quite interesting. What do you make of that, Jonathan?
I'm really surprised. Now, I know why, because it says it checks because the low stack-to-pot ratio means it can just jam all rivers anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to worry about trying to get all the money in now is the idea, right?
Uh-huh.
Practically, I'm just worried about all the scare cards that come on the turn. I guess if a diamond comes and he checks, we can jam the river and hope to get... What are we going to get called by? But maybe we go for that because we feel like he would have often bet the diamonds when it goes check check on the turn anyway. I don't know, like I still want to bet because I'm afraid of scare cards that kill action when we can get it all, but it's an interesting thought that sort of it's the opposite of what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I mostly disagree with everything you said there.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Which side are you on though,
on the checker or the shove?
Yeah,
I feel like shoving just feels more natural.
Yeah, me too.
I am concerned that the scare cards will actually garner some folds.
I think so, like
yeah.
I mean, Bobby Sura specifically, an ace, a king, a diamond are all horrible cards.
Right.
By the way, the nine pairing ain't great for Bobby Sura either.
No, it's not.
Because when Viffer checks back and then shoves the river suddenly, it sure looks like nine's full.
That's a good point.
We may have to call anyway with jacks, but we don't like it. You know, maybe we're going to make some bad folds. We see Bobby Sura is going to make some tight folds now. We know this. So, I think the scare cards are such. And also Viffer's table image is such that I really like the shove here better. But I understand why, with this low SPR argument at least, and that's an interesting thing to balance it with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, it thinks when there's a jam, jacks is a snap call.
Yeah, it's worth $4,000 more than not calling.
Which is a lot.
Which is significant. So what Danny did is he even strengthened the ranges, making Viffer's range stronger and less loosey-goosey.
Mm.
It still wanted to basically snap call the jacks, except it's worth 3.5K instead of 4K.
Right, and it still wants him to check the 8-7 on the turn, and it still wants, when he jams the turn instead, it still wants Stir to call basically instantly with the jacks. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we figured the solver would want to snap call jacks.
Of course.
The solver always wants to snap call anything that's good,
yeah, basically. Yeah, because the solver's like, you know, everyone overfolds. I ain't going to be one of those people, man.
He's not a person. Not yet. Well,
I mean,
is that robotist?
How do you even determine what a person is anymore?
That's a good point.
Yeah. It is definitely robotist.
When the robots actually become sentient, that clip is going to be found and I will be destroyed.
I mean, just because we run the robot wars once long ago doesn't mean, you know, you can talk this way about them.
I'm sorry. Did you hear me? I'm sorry.
I don't believe you're sorry. I think you're sorry you got caught, not that you're sorry that you said it.
Semantics.
Music is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic. And I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. I'm gonna be traveling the globe, we still have time to make it home.